Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's Bud Pod 236.
236. Who is this? Who is this? It's Phil and Pierre.
It is Phil and Pierre. How are you, Philippou?
I'm okay, doop-dee-day. I'm doing all right. I've been watching the Beckham documentary.
Yeah, everyone is...
on Netflix.
Everyone's creaming themselves over this Beckham documentary.
It seems to be this inexhaustible gold mine that Netflix has landed on of documentary about a famous person that we kind of already knew all the things about. But we're just going to learn about them again with them telling us about it.
Here's my question about the documentary.
Go on.
Why have they done it? They don't need the money. They don't need exposure. It would feel like nothing but a risk to me if I was David Beckham. He's in my head. I always call him David Beckham because there's an episode of Phone Jacker. Do you remember Phone Jacker?
Oh, yeah, I remember Phone Jacker. Revolutionary show.
Kai Van Novak, yeah. Where he's doing like a silly voice and he says, David Beckham. And him, he's doing one of his hilarious prank phone calls.
One of his little skits.
One of his little skits and he says, David Beckham.
David, this show is about David Beckham and his wife, Victoria Beckham.
Victoria Beckham.
Why would they want to do it?
Yeah.
I guess, is it... I feel like you get to a stage in your life, if you're famous, where you want to set the record straight, Pierre. You want to set the record straight. All my life, people have been talking about me. Well, now it's time you hear from the horse's mouth.
So it's when
time to set the record straight.
When you get to, like, 55, how old is he?
Must be okay. And taking bets. I'm gonna say 47.
I'm gonna say he's 53.
Wow. Okay.
I don't know. I'm guessing.
48.
Whoa. God.
48.
He looks older and younger than that. Do you know what I mean?
I know he's really lent into old steel tycoon look. You know, he's kind of. And he's got the tattoos of... He looks like a veteran hipster barber at this point.
Yeah. I think also because he spent so much time in sunny places, it's made him a bit crinkly.
A bit leathery. He's a bit on the leathery side now, yeah.
Yeah, he's crinkled up just a bit.
I think it is to set the record straight thing. And I'm sure Netflix would have offered plenty of money. And... I think people who have been in the public eye for a long time kind of want to stay in the public eye. It is addictive in its own right.
Mm.
Did you know that the guy who's making... You know the guy who's making the documentary? The guy who's the voice? Have you seen any of it, by the way?
No, I've seen clips on social media.
Right, yeah. Well, there's this voice of this American guy from time to time asking the questions and going, how did that make you feel? And of course, that goal was what started it all, really. He doesn't sound like that at all, but that's just my American accent right now. And it is Hugo from Succession.
All skinny neck bobblehead man himself. Although to
thinnest
be fair,
neck in the biz.
Thinnest neck in the biz. Although maybe, is he unwell?
Oh God.
Yeah, this is what I worry about when I see a neck that thin.
Oh no.
Is he battling a terrible condition?
Have we been cruel? About an ill man's neck.
It's really funny to hear lots of typing in the background as someone goes, have we been cruel?
Oh, okay. Literally, Google, I've typed in Hugo Succession actor. The next suggestion is Hugo Succession actor neck.
Yeah.
So we're not the first to think it. Oh, here we go. Fisher Stevens' illness and health.
Mm.
Okay, concerns have been raised online about Fisher Stevens' neck.
No.
Oh, man. Imagine you Google yourself and the first thing that comes up is neck, and you go, what the
f-? Or just neck, and then the second word is concern.
Oh, God. What happened to his neck? There. Okay, so he has had a Bethel. Oh, at 15, he had Hodgkin's disease. And it had radiation treatment.
Uh-huh, okay.
So his spleen removed.
Spleen?
But he seems to be all right.
But that was when he was 15, you say?
That was when he was 15.
Well, he's not 15 now.
No.
Hmm. But why is he the one interviewing David Betjem?
I don't know. I guess...
Is he a documentarian in actual fact?
I think he is a filmmaker, actually. Fisher Stevens.
Oh, well, there you go. Okay. I didn't know that about...
Director, producer. But then all the Americans always say that... Okay, see if he's a football fan.
No, come on. Surely not.
That he's not a football fan.
Yeah. He's American.
Yeah, there are they do exist. They are the equivalent of our American football weirdos in the UK.
Yeah, I see. I saw the other day, Phil, on a train up north. No, it was in a cafe. It was in a cafe in York. York? No. Fuck, where was it? Leicester. It was in Leicester. Yeah. I'm losing my mind. It wasn't in Leicester. I'm so sorry. I'm losing my fucking mind. It was in Lincoln. I've been on tour, if you're not aware, listeners.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Yeah, well, koji to everyone in Leicester, Lincoln, and York. Anyway, I was in fucking Lincoln, and there was a guy wearing like a Green Bay Packers jersey in this like northern cafe. like you know, there's like a grandma running it, you know, what can I do for you, love? And like scones, and then just the guy there going, I love the Green Bay Packers, me. And I was just like, this is horrible. I hate this.
I really like their quarterback.
They do so well on the 10-yard line.
It's not right, is
it? It's not right. You're supposed
Spike it. No. Go long. No.
Alan Bennett. Going, defense. Yeah.
Not right.
I don't like it at all. Right. I feel like it's colonization of culture, and we have enough of that from America.
It's true.
Also, it's even more fake and money based dodgy sport than anything we have here, and that's saying something.
Oh my gosh! If you watch an American football game, the adverts are the number of adverts are insane, and most unsettlingly, they sync up perfectly with the plays.
Mm.
So something will happen and they have to break the play to arrange, I don't know, a kick, and there'll be ads, and the ads will finish exactly at the right time for them to start off the next play.
Yeah, it's so crazy. I know what you mean, because you'll be like, hang on, they're about to restart the play, aren't they? And it's like, Coca-Cola has been proven to make you at least 7 feet taller, and then it's right back to the kick.
Yeah, and like it's like how and it's sort of which has followed which. Has the game had to? Is the game aware of how long these adverts are? Surely they play the adverts and then someone on the pitch says, "Okay, advert's over. We can continue the game." Right?
That would make the most sense. Or they've just got this like huge deck of adverts and they subtly speed it up. But we'd have heard if it was like at the end. You know?
Is that what it is at the end of those American
pharmaceutical ads?
Yeah, we're like, may cause instant death. But and it's like, but there's so many words. Is that because they've got to get back to the game? They're like, seek advice from your doctor. Not help responsible for anything. Might cause death. Bye.
So they're seeing a guy like cock his leg back for a kick. Like slowly as he draws his leg back. They're like, yeah, exactly. It might give you diarrhea. It might kill you. Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe that's what it is the whole time. But like, not only is there just constant adverts, like, if they just did one constant, like, fluid play, like rugby, an American football game would last about the same amount of time. But it takes, like, 2 hours to watch because of the adverts and because they have a different team for defending.
Yeah, they have to get just on a
bring
whole
on, like,
defense.
a whole new team, basically.
I mean, if that doesn't show just how much more money there is in America, nothing will, because literally their football, every team has two teams.
But then, and you get these guys who are like very strong, but incredibly overweight and slow, and they're like huffing oxygen by the side of the thing, because they can't run more than 10 yards at a time, and they don't need to.
They're just walls. They're just paid walls.
They're paid walls. And they can, as long as they can jog at an appreciable speed for 10 yards for a little bit, that's it.
What a life.
Crazy.
Yo, I'm paid to just stand in front of a running guy.
My job is to hit things.
My job is to be one of the paddles in Pong, basically.
Yeah, my job is to look at the average weight of everyone else who does my job and try to be at least 2 kilos heavier.
Crazy country, crazy sport, crazy game. Unbelievable.
Everything American is about decadence. More. It's such an achievement to be able to do it. Ironically, considering how the country was founded, they live as if they're all trying to be like a mad king.
That's it. I guess that's the American dream, is to remove the royal family so that we can all be royal.
All mad kings in our own right.
We could all eat some massive turkey legs at a big table and bite into a cherry tomato and it bursts in our teeth. You know, and drink wine out of a goblet and stain our lips. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the dream. Phil, where have you been on tour?
I have been on tour too. Wonderful places, such as this past week I was in Lancaster, Bradford, and St Albans. All fantastic shows.
What did you think of Lancaster? I've been there a couple of times.
The Lancaster Grand was a marvelous theatre, and it's a great crowd, a great show. It was one of my fave shows. And Bradford, the people who came out were very nice and very surprised that I was there. I said on stage, "This is my first time in Bradford. Can you believe it?" And everyone in unison very clearly said, "Yes," like that.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, like that.
Because there's no one coming to Bradford.
Apparently not.
Ah.
No, but the theatre I was in, St. George's Hall in Bradford, is where David Hockney worked selling programs before he became an artist. David Hockney's from Bradford.
Is he?
Yeah, which is funny because I've been in such a Hockney mood recently, and I went to the theatre where he got like a little job. He'd sell programs, and in payment, they'd let him watch the operas that they put on. Is that nice?
Oh, man, that's really cool. Yeah, a lot of the best artists and actors who we're trained by the class system, Phil, to presume are from Kent, are actually from the north.
Yeah, yeah. There's him. There's Lowry from the Manchester side.
Yeah.
And that is all. Oh, no. Is, what's his name? Guy with the dresses. Grayson Perry.
Grayson Perry.
Oh, no, he's Southern.
He's Southern, isn't he?
He's Southern, yeah.
I associate him with quite a fairly Southern accent.
Yeah, he's Southern.
Phil, you're into art now. What art are you going to start doing? Come on now.
That I'm going to make?
Yeah.
No, I'm going to be an appreciator of art. I'm going to treat art like wine. I'm really learning to appreciate and understand art, but I'll never try to make it. I know I can't make wine, and I can't make art. I just can't do it.
Come on, you can smush some grapes. You can paint some grapes.
If you can smush grapes, you can paint grapes.
Yeah. I'm going to start shouting that dressed like a drill sergeant.
I can't draw, man. I just can't do it. And
you did
I don't
engineering.
Get...
You can draw. Can't you draw a diagram?
With like a ruler, with a ruler and a compass, but not for aesthetic value. I can't do it. I just have no control of my hand. It's mad.
Really?
It just goes nowhere.
Did you not do dorky little models when you were growing up?
No. I had friends who would draw like cars with lots of guns on them. But I could never do it. I was just really bad. I think for me, you know, I was good at singing when I was young. And
that's
I can
true.
Sing and I can hold a tune. And when people are tone deaf and can't hold a tune, I don't understand it. I don't understand how you don't have that control of the pitch in your voice. But when I can understand it is when someone says, draw something. And I just have no... Like, I can't transfer the image in my brain to the image on paper. And that must be what it's like not to be able to sing. You can't transfer the tune in your head to out coming out of your mouth.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's definitely it. Because you can hear it. You go, I know how it should sound. And I think, and I'm trying to make my flesh do that.
Yeah, that's what drawing is like for me. Okay. I know how it should look, but I try and it's horrible. It's a nightmare.
Your hand
the lines
just starts,
don't go anywhere. My sense of proportion are just going out the window.
Your hand just starts doing swastikas over and over again.
Yeah, I'm like, what? I don't understand it. it always comes out horrible.
Yeah, well, you can teach yourself all that.
I suppose.
Anyone listening.
But then that takes discipline.
Anyone listening who wants to draw, you can learn how to draw. It's possible. It's just going to be boring.
By the way, one question I've always had on that is, like, you've watched a video of a Disney artist, say, draw Lilo from Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah.
No, it's Stitch the monster from Lilo and Stitch.
Stitch is the monster, yeah.
So Stitch from Lilo and Stitch, and they go, it's very simple. This is how you draw Stitch from Lilo and Stitch. And they draw like a round oval. You start with a round oval there. And you have to draw this sort of curvy. They draw this sort of cross, right? This curvy cross. That's it.
Yeah.
And to know where the eyes go. And then it goes the lip. And you draw and all these like prep lines and prep curves. And then by the time they finish, they're like, oh yeah, the eyes and the nose and the mouth are on the right place. But you have this fucking cross on there now.
Yeah.
You got this big cross on the face. How do you get rid of the cross?
So they'll normally draw it faintly in a type of sort of erasable pencil. Well, these days they'll just get rid of it digitally, you know.
Right. But every time they're drawing Stitch, they're drawing this cross?
In animation especially, they will, because they're trying to make sure the eye line is moving in line with the head. And like it keeps it all on a rail, you know.
So every frame they draw, they're drawing this cross? And
Well, not now that it's digital, but in the old days.
Wow.
Yeah, they will. That's insane. Will do. But also remember, they'll do it with the cross, and then they'll put it, and then they'll get the transparent celluloid animation frame and draw over it. So it's about drawing the final thing, like tracing almost, like through something transparent. Like if you can buy a frame of animation, you know, of like a Bugs Bunny or something.
Mm.
But he's hovering in like nothing space on a transparent piece of square.
Yeah.
And they'll put that on the background.
Yeah. 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 No, I get you.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I have an enormous coffee table book called The Animator's Survival Guide, and it's very interesting because it's about the golden age of animation, like those the Disney cartoons that we remember. Where do you remember the animation was so detailed and a bit pencil-y?
Mm.
And actually, in really old animations, you can sometimes see a little blip where they forgot to rub out a little bit of pencil.
Oh, I see.
You can sometimes see it on very old animations. Little line pops up where it shouldn't come up. But these guys who draw these characters, even like Porky Pig and stuff, they are such incredible like artists in terms of life drawing as well. And they would make all the students they taught do life drawing. And bearing in mind, this book came out like 30 years ago, maybe more. In the book, the guy's complaining about how no one knows how to do that anymore. Like the skill's gone. Like all the guys who can draw like that, like those classic 50s and 60s Warner Brothers animations, are at the time even all like 90 or dead. And it's because the guy's complaining. He does these lectures for all the animation students in California, wherever it is that he was lecturing. And they are like, how do you do that? And he's like, you just have to be really good at drawing. You have to do loads of life drawing. And it's really interesting because, you know, when a character with like a big belly walks and they it sort of goes ba-dum, 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 and it's got weight to it.
Mm.
The ability to draw that weight and to understand how like flesh moves within a thing and how to make things.
You have to have a real understanding for the physical world.
Yeah, exactly. And how things look like they have momentum and how things bounce off other things. It's a real skill. It's drawing plus another 3 or 4 other skills. It's so impressive when people can do it.
I just don't have the patience for drawing and art.
It takes so much patience.
And faith. I think you have to have so much faith in yourself that you draw this little line and it looks like nothing, looks like a horrible monster. And you have to have faith that in time, once you add everything else on, it will look like a picture.
Yeah.
But as soon as I draw like 2 circles, I go, this looks horrible.
Yeah, and
I'll just give up.
You start panicking, adding swastikas. when I was drawing properly, And I mean, like, spending 3 or 4 hours on a drawing in a day. Mostly yeah. the internal monologue in my head was talking myself down. Like, the whole time. Certainly for a lot of it was going, okay, that's fine, we can fix that. Well, maybe it's supposed to look like that. Oh, no, we can keep going. Well, that's... careful. Like, it was like the internal monologue of someone climbing a rock face with no rope. It was never just like... just like loving it. You know?
Right.
It's so rarely that. It's always like full concentration, so tense, because you're like, if I fuck this up, I'm going to scream. Basically in my head the whole time.
Yeah. I just don't have the patience for it, I don't think.
Someday, Phil, maybe for your retirement, you'll start getting into watercolors, peaceful watercolors.
Yeah. I'll paint my garden like Monet.
Did you not have to do any Chinese calligraphy?
We did, yeah. We had to learn Mao Bi, which just means hair pen.
Yeah.
It's a pen made with horse hairs for your bristles, you know? And there's a way of holding the pen. You have to have your finger on the top end, and then your thumb and middle finger holding the lower end, and you paint like this, so very with the pen vertically pointing downwards, you know. And you have to learn, of course, well, when you learn to write Chinese, you have to learn the order of the strokes. So a Chinese character has to be written in a particular order. The strokes have to be written in a particular order, and I can still remember the order of them all now. I can't really, you know, I can't imagine writing it in any other order. You just know it.
But what if you were to try and draw something holding a pencil like that?
You still know the order.
No. You're saying you don't have good hand control. Well, you've got good enough hand control for Chinese calligraphy, my friend.
Well, I mean, you haven't seen them.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Because with Chinese calligraphy, it's all about getting the tails right. So you can tell the direction of the stroke because it starts with
a blob,
a round blob, and it finishes with the taper.
Yeah.
And yeah, the calligraphy is all about getting the taper right and getting the tails to be pointing the right way and the curves to be in the exact right way. And master calligraphers can make each character look identical in that way, you know. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. But yeah, so we had to do it a bit at Chinese school. Mao Bi.
Well, were you any good at it?
I don't think so. I don't recall being that good at it.
Because my hack there was that if I got you to hold a pencil like that and draw something, you'd have more control.
Oh, I'm holding a pencil like that right now.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to try and draw a face.
Do a Mao Bi drawing.
This doesn't work at all. The pen's too long. The pencil's too long. Okay. Okay, I'm going to draw. Okay, right eye.
Here we go.
Left eye. Oh, wow. Okay, this is just a little quick little...
I'm on tenterhooks. Phil's going to hold up the Mona Lisa. It's going to be this incredible, like, really sensitively done graphite portrait of me on this call.
Hey, you know what? This is coming out all right, you know?
Yeah, see? Hey, I could be an art teacher.
Okay, just finishing the hair. And, showing it to Pierre now.
Yeah. Where is it? Yeah, that's a good cartoon.
Can you describe the cartoon to the listener,
please? It looks like a goblin traveling at high speed.
That's it, yeah. His goblin has got he's got two teeth. He's smiling. He's having a great time. His hair is being blown backwards.
Yeah.
It looks like a goblin on a roller coaster, basically.
Yeah, the noise that popped into my head seeing the face was immediately...
I'm quite happy with the nose there.
That's a really nice nose.
Thank you. I've never been able to do a nose properly. Now, that's the thing with the drawing is I don't know perspective.
Yeah, perspective is a real fucker. It's a real fucker. I'm so amazed. Some people just have this natural ability to see it all, and it's, even just thinking about it is making me want to do it and too exhausted to even contemplate it. You should post that on your Instagram with no explanation for listeners' joy.
Maybe, because on Instagram, I always need something to post along with the come to the show text.
Yeah.
I just need a picture of something. It doesn't have to be much. Maybe, yeah, maybe I can start doing illustrations.
Could you post that? Here's a fun thing. Could you post that? If you don't do this, I want to do this. So it's up to you if you do it or I do it. Post okay. it with the caption, high speed goblin. And then all the listeners have to comment underneath, high speed goblin.
What?
And just because no one who's in on it, anyone who's not in on it will be so confused. She's like, what the fuck is it? And there's like hundreds of comments, just high speed goblin, just over and over again. Like it's this really popular thing.
Right, and the only thing you can do to engage with it is to just say its name.
Yeah, just to write underneath high speed goblin.
High speed goblin.
Any other comments will be deleted. No matter how nice they are. You can only write the phrase high speed goblin. And because of the way Instagram works now, that's going to pop up in loads of people's feeds. And they'll be like, what the fuck? It would be so funny. It's such a funny drawing as well.
I've written this on the invoice for some curtains.
Are you buying new curtains?
I did a few months back. I'm really bad at throwing away like
documents,
invoices, and order receipts. And I'm always like, what if I need it? I'm a hoarder, but for paperwork, which is just a hoarder, I guess.
It depends on the paperwork. Like if you're a hoarder for your own life insurance policy, then that's fine. But like, are you worried that you're going to have to return the curtains?
No. I don't know why. Yeah. In my mind, there's always been this concern that one day some man in a suit will knock on my door and go, hello, Phil Wang. I'm here to check everything. And I'll go, oh, no. I knew you were coming.
Oh, the everything man.
The everything man. Fuck. And he's like, where's the receipt for that keychain you bought in Bali? And I'll go, oh, fuck. I think it's somewhere around here. I think I put it near the keychain because I knew this day would come.
Well, like he's there and says, I'm just going to need to see your documents.
Yeah.
It's just very vague.
Yeah. And I instantly know, I know.
Yeah, you have no questions. You accept his authority immediately. Please, come in. Would you like a cup of tea? I'd like a cup of tea and the receipt for the tea. Yes, of course.
Yeah, that is what I think will happen one day.
And you say
the man will come to check everything.
Yeah, and you say to him, do you accept digital receipts? And he just looks at you like this. He just tilts his head forwards in a, did you really just ask me that way? Like a teacher.
It's actually quite a good start of like a short story or a Tim Key poem.
Yeah.
The man came to check everything.
Yeah.
It's quite good, eh?
I'd been expecting him, but it was still a shock.
The man came to check everything.
He
looked through all the drawers and tuttered as I watched, nervous, arms crossed.
Yeah.
Is everything in place? He pulled off his glove and it snapped as it came off his middle finger. Yes. I suppose so. Yeah, something like that, you know.
Yeah. So, do you have the receipt for this spatula? And you shrug and say, oh, it's from before I moved into this building. And he shakes his head sadly and says to himself, yes, I thought so. Yes, I thought that might be what you'd say.
Yeah.
I can understand the temptation, but then
I'll start writing short stories about my anxieties. Maybe that will exercise them. Is one exercised of their demons, or does one's demons get exercised? Is it like an evacuate situation? People say that they were evacuated from the building, which is not right. The building was evacuated.
Oh yeah, that's true, isn't it? I think it is. Like, I'm going to exercise this demon.
So it's the demon that gets exercised, not the person. The person is evacuated of the demon, the demon gets exercised.
Yeah, I think it's like banishing.
Okay, good. Okay, yeah. Well, maybe writing my short stories will exercise me of my anxieties. And one of which is getting the words evacuate and exercise wrong.
Yeah, yeah. You're like a very safety-conscious priest. Mm. Those are two very important words to you.
But BBC news reporters will get evacuate wrong.
Yeah, yeah,
they'll say
that
these 100 people were evacuated from this building. They weren't. The building was evacuated.
Yeah, if these 100 people were evacuated, they all shat themselves.
That's it, exactly.
Yeah.
But then I go, well, if a BBC news reporter's saying it wrong, then what does it matter? Maybe we should all just say it wrong.
Well, that's when you just give up and go, culture has beaten me with its big club, and now I have to surrender.
I'm the old Japanese soldier on the island.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Fighting a war no one cares about anymore.
I have that with Begs the Question.
Yeah. No, you've given me Begs the Question vampirism.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I used to have a routine. I tried to make a routine work about how being a pedant is like vampirism, and people just didn't get it. They just think you're mad.
For those who don't know, who want to become vampires, when you say it begs the question, you're not meant to then follow that up with the question.
Yeah.
You don't say, it begs the question, where did all the money go? You have to say, it raises the question, where did all the money go? If you say it begs the question, then the question is so obvious, it doesn't need to be repeated and you mustn't say it.
Yeah. It's basically just like saying, the phrase means, the thing I've just outlined has an obvious logical contradiction.
Right, right, right. It should be, it's the equivalent of makes you think. You don't say it makes you think and then say the thing that it makes you think. You just go, makes you think.
That's true, yeah. Wow, it really makes you think. What will happen after I die? Like, what?
Yeah, we know. That's literally talking? That's what I just said.
Yeah.
Imagine someone goes, what will happen after I die? And then someone else goes, yeah, it makes you think. What will happen after I die? You sound insane.
That's really funny, though. Yeah, I mean, like, it's like, what is, like, what happens to us after we die? Yeah, it really makes you think. What'll happen to us after we die?
What a weird way to annoy people.
That's really funny. That's like something from, like, a Steve Martin sort of silly gag. That's great.
But yeah, that's what begs the question is, I guess. Do people who understand begs the question, that's what it sounds like when someone says it begs the question and then asks the question.
Yeah, it's exactly. Oh, man. Well, speaking of it makes you think, it makes me think about what correspondence we have.
Yes, it begs the question, what have people sent in this week? Okay.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ring, letters, emails, phone calls, correspondence.
Oh, right. That's really funny.
Makes you think.
Makes you think. What about when I die? Yes, that's what I just said.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
It would be so irritating.
It's such a weird, insidious way of like hijacking a conversation or like hijacking a topic.
You're just taking over it. Like, no, I was talking about that. let's see. Okay, Phil. We've heard from Sam.
Sam! Yeah, fam.
Oh, nice.
All right, fam.
Yeah, very good.
I'm getting all top boy about this.
Yeah, you are from the ends now.
Mm-hmm.
Sam says, hi, poopy bum faces.
As they say in Top Boy.
Yeah. Me and my girlfriend have been arguing about whether or not rimming is a gendered term.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
It has never struck me as a gendered term, because anyone can be rimmed. The beauty of rimming.
That's your new book.
Everyone can be rimmed. An egalitarianism for the new age.
Or it's just everyone can be rimmed, and then underneath in cursive, the beauty of rimming. And it's just a big coffee table book of beautiful film camera photographs.
But the subtitle can never repeat the word in the title, right? So it'd have to be rimming. What did you call it? Art of...
Everyone can be rimmed. The beauty of anuses, I guess.
Yeah, anal oral stimulation.
Yeah.
It'd have to be like rimming. The beauty of anal oral stimulation.
Yeah.
In cursive.
So Sam's theory is, when it's a man's bum, it's rimming. And when it's a lady, it's eating ass. Or eating ass.
I hate... This is one problem I do have with British swears is ass. I hate ass. Ass is so much better than ass. Ass is so much grosser. I'm going to lick your ass. Fun, sexy. I'm going to lick your ass. Ugh, horrible, dirty, gross. There's shit in an ass. An ass is hot. An ass is hot. An ass is shit in it.
An ass has a...
An ass is perky. You can slap an ass. An ass is covered in diarrhea. You sit on an ass. An ass has cellulite. And pimples.
An ass is like a cartoon bum from the Beano.
Yes, it's when SpongeBob zooms in on a horrible ass. That's an ass.
An ass is like an ass includes a section of the internal architecture. An ass has a bum hole, whereas an ass is like a purely bum cheeks based aesthetic word.
That's right. J-Lo has an ass. Gordon Brown has an ass.
Yeah. What a pair. What a pair of people and pair of asses. Yeah, it is horrible when you hear someone like a British person talking about an American celebrity like J-Lo and going, like, oh, I love her ass.
Horrible.
Don't say that. But then equally annoying is sometimes when someone with a really British vibe says, shake your ass. And you're like, all right, calm down. We've all got television.
Yeah. What one thing that a characterization of the British I'm trying to formulate is that a large proportion of especially male British, well, exactly male British desire is the wench.
Yeah.
We're still into the wench. And like, if you look at the women who, especially in sort of the noughties, you know, Nuts magazine, all that, the women who are held up in the UK as being the epitome of female beauty would not be considered that in America. They're sort of very, they're buxom and they're wenchy. The English are still into the wench.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of like a hot girl when you were at school in Britain was blonde, big bosomed, and kind of wenchy, quite thick with the two C's, wenchy. You know?
I think that's true, yeah. Nuts magazine and Page 3 of the Sun. And
even someone like Maya Jama, who's obviously, you know, very beautiful with an hourglass figure, but there's something wenchy about her. And that's part of the reason I think she's so successful, is she is this sort of beautiful mixed race look, but she's also got the fundamental English wenchiness about her.
Yeah. I think this is also Wales and Scotland.
Yeah, I think so. It is British. Yeah, the wenchiness. Whereas Ireland doesn't have the wenchiness. Ireland is a bit more ethereal, a bit more elfine, I think, the Irish beauty standard.
Yeah, it's a lot more I play the harp.
Whereas British is like, I broke the harp, I fell on it. I'm a wench.
I was going to say more like serving the beers in a kind of...
Yeah, there's that as
It's a bit Oktoberfest, do you think?
Yeah, maybe it's Germanic. Maybe it comes over from that influence.
Yeah. This is
interesting. But arse is very wenchy. A wench has an arse. a Hollywood starlet has an ass, but a wench has
an
ass.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's true. That's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, someone put forward by the sort of Hollywood machine has that, you know, shake your ass, you know, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But yeah, so...
Sorry, bit sidetracked there.
So it's eating ass, basically, when it's a lady. This is Sam's theory.
Eating ass when it's a lady, rimming when it's a man. I think, yeah, there's something to that. There's something to that.
But he
I think
says, my
men,
girlfriend...
Men don't like to be thought of as being eaten.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, maybe... what? How hetero are we being when we say that?
Oh, right, yeah. I mean, I'm being very heteronormative here. But presumably this is coming from a heteronormative
couple
perspective. Yes.
Well, the girlfriend is adamant, which is a very funny thing to be adamant about. I am adamant that anyone can rim and consequently be rimmed.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. I think both can be rim men and women can be rimmed. But a man, a heteronormative man, I would never say that I got my ass eaten. maybe it's a toxic masculine thing of like not wanting to feel consumed, not wanting to feel devoured.
I have a... I'm going to put forward a whole new theory here, Phil.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to Tony Blair this, a third way.
Okay.
To
rim. Yeah, what is a third way?
A third way to rim.
New rimming.
Yeah. A new rim has broken, has it not? I think they are both descriptive phrases for technique.
Interesting. Rimming is delicate. Rimming is about just stimulating the perimeter. Yeah. Circular motion.
Circular, a rim.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You confine yourself to the rim.
Yeah, that's what you say as you do it. You say, I'm confining myself to the rim. You announce that. It's good etiquette.
Whereas eating ass is a free-for-all.
That's just, you're going crazy down there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy town.
You're a dog going at peanut butter. You're just, there's no technique. It's just...
Don't say peanut butter in this context, Phil.
Why not?
It's just so close to shit.
I was going to say chocolate, and I thought, no, chocolate's too close to shit. I'll say peanut butter. Happy medium.
To be fair, it would have been weird if you said jam. Is that the most British phrase? I'll eat your ass like jam.
Ugh, I'll lick jam off your ass. Ugh.
Oh, fucking hell. I remember...
Might as well say I'm going to suck a Marmite off your todger. Horrible.
Yes. Yes.
Horrible.
I'm going to nosh the Marmite off your todger. Yeah, some horrible.
Nosh someone off is... I hate it so much. I hate British phrases for sex. Shag, horrible word.
Yeah, well, it's
snog,
all...
Snog, horrible
It's very
word.
Like postcardy, and there's something quite orc-like about some of these words.
It's all orky. British sex is so orky and medieval and peasanty. I'm going to snog her, then shag her.
Yeah, these are crazy verbs.
Ugh, it's all fucking peasant words. It's horrible. It's like the British words for sex sounds like it's our last chance before the Earl beheads us. You know, we better have a last shag before the Earl comes off and rips my todger off because I stole too much barley.
But horrible. But I respect the earthiness of it. It's got a real...
I don't like the earthiness of it. I think maybe we have different approaches to sex. For me, sex needs to be very like safe and clean and idealized and very aesthetic and graceful.
You want to have sex the way that like Disney characters would have sex.
Yes, absolutely. The way that Sleeping Beauty has sex with the prince at the end.
Yeah, just very like... Da, 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 da,
yeah,
da.
Very dancey.
Dancy, yeah. And the sort of silk is being folded gently, and all the magic Disney birds and mice are watching, and they're crying with happiness, but not wanking.
Yes,
while they
absolutely.
Watch you do it. Yes, I think that's yeah. But then, like
when I have sex, I'm very, very, very thoughtful about how does this look? How does this look?
Oh man, that's something you could write a short story about.
Like, you know
the sex director.
When you see like a depiction of like like normal real sex in like a gritty indie movie or something.
Yeah.
And it's like Mystery style. And the way the guy's ass sort of collapses.
Yeah.
Ugh. If I ever think I look like that when I have sex, I will become a monk. I will never have sex again. The way that man the guy's ass becomes, ugh, it's so horrible.
What, like when it sort of pumps inwards?
Yes, and becomes like flat and sort of squeezed in, and oh, I hate it so much. It's so horrible. It's the worst sight in the world.
You're a natural aesthete, I swear.
I'm an aesthete.
Oh man, that's so funny. I know what you mean about the horror, though. I remember watching, you know, those like top 10 crazy moments sort of TV shows.
Yeah.
I remember watching one. It would have been like 20 years ago. And it was like narrated by Zoe Ball or something.
Mm.
And it was like craziest Brits abroad or I don't know, or something like this. I don't know. But yeah. I remember the voiceover saying, making a joke about how the classic British joke about how British women go on holiday to Spain and they get seduced by all the sexy Spanish waiters, you know.
Mm.
That's the trope. Right. And then the voiceover joke was like, oh, come on, ladies, you know that you love it when it doesn't have to be like a sexy Spanish waiter. You know you love it when like an English bloke or something comes up to you with his cheese breath and says, fancy a shag.
Ugh, this and
that,
is it.
I was watching that when I was like 11 and I went, ugh, I just recoiled away from the idea of like cheese breath. It's so vivid.
Yeah.
That's one of those things that like autistically that line has stuck in my head for 2 decades.
There is this.
Fancy a shag, darling.
Ugh, yeah, there is this nihilism about British sex. You know, it is nihilistic. British sex is really nihilistic.
What do you mean?
Well, it's like fancy a shag. It's kind of like the idea is you might as well.
Yeah.
It's like the world is about to end. You might as well. Getting fingered behind a bin is very British and very end of the world shit. It's very like a comet is coming. You know? It's nihilistic. British sex is really nihilistic. It is as if nothing matters. Because it has no appreciation for the aesthetic of sex and the beauty of sex. It is nihilistic. Nothing matters.
So funny, man. This is so easily your funniest opinion, I think. And it is
that
the
British sex is nihilistic.
Yeah, if you just keep saying it's nihilistic, I would pay so much money to watch you try and do this as material to like a very reluctant British crowd.
And yeah, you're trying in Kent. I just go and do a gig in Kent and to tell them their sex is nihilistic.
Yeah, exactly. I want you to do a gig to a bunch of stag do's and hen do's, like a kind of doomed preacher saying, you're all going to hell. You may not believe me now.
You're all going to aesthetic hell.
You'd be like the guy in The Wicker Man.
Yes, yes.
And you're pointing at them going, you maniacs, you crazy. And they're all just going, la la la, fancy a shag. And they're just ignoring you.
You have turned your backs on God. You must repent. Repent.
And they're just pumping each other behind the theater while you say that.
Yeah, I'm, oh God, no, Jesus, no.
You're saying that and it's a big statue of a man's compressed, tensed buttocks. Oh no, oh Jesus Christ. Oh, we need to announce the big news.
Yes, yes, yes. We are very excited and happy and festive to announce that we are doing another Bud Pod Live.
Bud Pod Live, baby.
Christmas edition.
Xmas time.
It's a very smelly Krapmas.
A very smelly Krapmas, the 15th of December at Bloomsbury Theatre in London. The 15th of December, it will be on sale Friday the 13th of October. Ooh, spooky. Ooh, bad
spooky
luck.
Spooky Christmas, spooky.
Friday the 13th of October at 10 a.m.
Yes.
And if you are a patron, if you are a member of the VIP Patrons Club, there will be a limited number of discounted tickets for being a lovely patron. Look out on Thursday the 12th for the code that I will be posting on the Patreon. I will be posting it as a little text post.
Yes, and you, once you, so that's for patrons to learn the code so that you all can get your discounted ticket on Friday, but there are only 100 discounted patron tickets, so first come, first serve on those. And of course, sale will be open to everyone at the same time at 10 a.m. on Friday the 13th.
That's right.
Of October. We've done two live Bud Pods now, and both have been really fun.
They're so
despite
much fun.
My expectations and wishes. They've been really great time. And they've been really good episodes as well. Having everyone in the room really imbues it all with a special energy. And this will be our first festive one. So I don't know what we're going to do to make it festive-y, but we'll figure something out.
We'll have to exchange gifts, maybe.
Yes, I was just thinking we'll have to bring presents for each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I actually already know what I'm getting you as a gift. It's already on my list. I've started my Christmas shopping list early this year. Oh, yeah?
For me?
It's a reminder on my phone.
Oh, damn.
Although I've called it Christmas shopping, which is annoying because when I say Siri, add something to shopping list, it goes, shopping or Christmas shopping? And I'm like, obviously I'm not buying lettuce for Christmas shopping. But whatever.
So I'm not getting lettuce. Okay, that's a clue.
Yeah, of course not. Yeah, but it'll be a fun time, so please do come if you can too. Bud Pod Live, Christmas edition, 15th of December.
Yeah, we'll see you guys there.
Ching-a-ling-ling, ching-a-ling-ling. And we'll see you Patreons on Friday. Everyone else, we'll see you next week. Have a wonderful time. Love you a lot. Bye.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.